Blog Talk Radio.
Trying to take my country from me. Yeah. November 9th.
I'm gonna come at you like a spider monkey.
That's right. Spider monkey.
Talk about something that not a lot of people are talking about.
All right. Let's get this party started. November 9th, 2011 AD, beautiful Alexandria, Virginia. The United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun, 2020 Tesla's in the house. It starts. It starts right here and it starts right now. The President of the United States, not his minions, but the President of the United States, has begun the annual war on Christmas by taxing Christmas trees, taxing Christmas trees, socializing Christmas trees. Dude is socializing Christmas trees, and here's how he's doing it. You see, me and you, well, we're obliged to pay a tax on each Christmas tree we buy so that other Christmas trees may live, so that other Christmas trees will flourish. We're paying a tax on Christmas trees so that there'll be more Christmas trees for everybody. And I didn't predict this, but I am so happy that a backlash has ensued and the war on Christmas trees has been canceled. Socializing Christmas trees so that other Christmas trees may live a long, happy life until next Christmas, when they will be chopped down and sold. And then, of course, each Christmas tree will be taxed so that we can produce more Christmas trees to chop down and sell and tax. Now, the U.S. Department of Agriculture is going to delay implementation and revisit a proposed new 15-cent fee on fresh-cut Christmas trees. Okay. War on Christmas has officially begun. Socializing Christmas trees, you all. This is where we put our foot down. There was an outcry, and now the Agriculture Department has put a hold on it. The National Christmas Tree Association. I can't. You can't make this kind of stuff up. What a wonderful world. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report, and we're going to report on the situation because the situation is dire. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. We'll be right back.
I wouldn't be running if I didn't think that I can bring the country together most effectively, that I can overcome the special interests in Washington most effectively, that I can inspire the American people to get involved in their government most effectively.
Get right up, folks. Here's the answer to your problems. Dr. Utopia's sensational new discovery, ism. Ism will cure any ailment of the body politic. It's horrific. It's tremendous. Once you swallow the contents of this bottle, you'll have the bountiful benefit of higher wages, shorter hours, and security. Enormous profits, no strikes. Remember, you're the big boss. Government control, no worry about votes. Name your own salary. Bigger crops, lower costs. Why, ism even makes the weather perfect every day. And now then, because we are introducing this amazing item for the first time in this country, it isn't going to cost you 1 cent. All you have to do is sign this little scrap of paper, and you get your bottle absolutely free.
I hereby turn over to ISM Incorporated everything I have, including my freedom and the freedom of my children and my children's children, in return for which said ism promises to take care of me forever.
Pardon me. Pardon me.
And who are you, my good man?
I'm John Q. Public.
Ah, my fine friend, you're just in time to share this generous and gigantic offer. Sign right here.
Mind if I read it first? Keep your shirts on, boys. You know, including freedom. Freedom? Well, sign away my freedom. Why, this is ridiculous.
Don't be corny, brother.
Sure, our system of free enterprise isn't perfect. But before
before we throw it away for some imported double talk, you boys ought to try a little taste of Dr. Ism's formula to see what you get in exchange for your freedom. Go ahead, try it.
You can't do this to me! I'll strike!
The state forbids strikes.
Wait till the union hears about this!
Ah, yes, the union. Welcome to our ranks, number 1313.
I'll take this case to the Supreme Court.
The state is the Supreme Court. Our decision is as follows. No more private property. No more you.
And if I'm voting, put a stop to this.
Farmers don't vote anymore.
What'll I do for seed next year?
You won't have to worry about next year. The state will do your planning from now on.
We must fight to regain our freedom, or everything is lost. Everything!
Everything is fine. Everything is fine. Everything is fine. Everything is fine. Everything is fine.
When anybody preaches disunity, tries to pit one of us against the other through class warfare, race hatred, or religious intolerance, you know that person seeks to rob us of our freedom and destroy our very lives. And we know what to do about it.
And now, gentlemen, no violence, please. And don't throw those bottles. Don't throw those bottles!
All right, we're back. The C. Robert Jones Situation Report. That little cartoon can be found on YouTube, and it's starring some of our really old cartoon characters from back in the 50s and early 60s. Southern knows what I'm talking about. Tesla 2, those kinds of things. But the really old grainy cartoons, which is why it sounded that way. But it's interesting that young candidate Obama said that he could bring folks together, bring America together, you know, the special interests, blah, 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 la-di-da. And he did exactly the opposite of that. There's class warfare. There's us against them. There's the rich against the poor. All of that. But wasn't this all foretold? Didn't we know that this is how it was actually going to go? You know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, they say. I am very much like my father. I think like him. Hell, at this stage in my development, I look just like my own dad. But my father and I have much more in common. Our philosophies on life are very much the same. I am indeed a clone of my father. I am an extension of him. He is gone now, but I live on. He lives on through me. Are we all that way when it comes to our dads? I'm speaking for the guys right now. I don't know. I can't say for sure. I can only say for me that I am an extension of my dad. I can say for sure that my son is an extension of me. He's just like me in temperament and humor, all of that. We're pretty much the same, both of my sons. They followed in my footsteps. They became Marine officers. But I could say the same for my daughters as well. So when the President of the United States seeks to tear America apart through class warfare, suggesting that those of us who have a little more than someone else, well, we should be punished for that. We should be punished for our achievement. But look no further than the tragic life of Barack's daddy. Leaving behind his son, his divorced wife, if he were actually married to her at all, and an unfinished degree from Harvard. Barack Sr. returned to his native Kenya, where women, booze, and work problems got the best of him. Now, The Other Barack by Sally H. Jacobs pretty much recounts the tragic life, the misspent life of Barack Hussein Obama Sr. When Barack Obama Sr. returned to Nairobi, he found his homeland almost unrecognizable. In the 5 years that he had been gone, Kenya had been transformed from a beleaguered colony choked by imperial regulations and restrictions into a proudly independent nation, churning with excitement as the transfer of political power, financial power into African hands was finalized. But Barack wasn't done. Barack Sr. thought that even a Nairobi that was managed, ruled by Kenyans, by Africans, was still far too westernized. It was too, free. It was far too, something about capitalism. It was all about capitalism in Nairobi. Well, Obama swept into a surge of young men and women who returned from schooling overseas and were confronted with the task of creating a nation of their own, from scratch pretty much. Although it would take years to alter some of the social and economic structures that were colonial legacies, thousands of the 56,000 Europeans who were in the country at the time of independence had already fled. They'd gone. But Barack Sr., well, a womanizer, a boozer, a socialist, a man who could not stand to see his own country, Kenya, Nairobi, Africa, thriving under capitalism. Indeed, I would be honored to do so, speaking to Southern Sense in a private chat. Obama was raised not by his father. In fact, after Obama Sr. left his family, he saw Barack only one time after he abandoned his family. Only one time when the young man was a teen, and then no more. Obama was raised by his grandparents and his single mother. Documents relating to his father's life, well, they paint a picture of a serial womanizer who officials were trying to force out of the country because he was bedding every woman he could get his hands on. Huh. Particularly the ladies of the fairer skin. And back then, such things were not tolerated unless you were Jack Johnson. And pretty much Jack Johnson had died, 50 years before that. Such things were not tolerated by having this African going around bedding all the white co-eds at Harvard and other places when he's supposed to be a married man full of responsibility. Now, though the proof that Obama was actually born in Hawaii may silence some critics, a new and more interesting side of Obama's life has emerged. That his father, Barack Obama Sr., was a serial womanizer and polygamist who government and university officials were trying to boot out of the country and ultimately succeeded. Obama Sr. married Stanley Ann Durham, a white student from Kansas. Not only when he was said to have already been married to a woman in Kenya, but at the time when interracial marriages were still illegal in many parts of the country. Pretty much the guy was just no damn good. And I don't know. I suggest to you that Obama has a lot of issues with that. Obama's narcissism, his unwillingness to bend from his Marxist socialist dictum, all of that. I'm going to say right here and now that we are a product of our development. When Barack Sr. abandoned his family in Hawaii to head back to Kenya, where his other family was, so that he could bed more women, father more children, and pretty much become the scourge of Kenya. Well, I don't know. I don't know. This all just seems crazy to me. Like I said on yesterday's show, Barack Obama is a snake oil salesman. He's a man who conned the United States of America, the whole country, into believing that he was something he was not, into believing that he could lead this country. Now, earlier in our blog talk experience, both me and Tesla talked about whether or not Barack Hussein Obama was the Antichrist. I know a lot of you remember those shows. Some were tongue-in-cheek, but a lot of times we were talking serious business. Because much like the Antichrist, Barack Obama came out of nowhere and mesmerized the American people. In fact, he mesmerized the whole world. The whole world was his oyster. He was a rock star with an approval rating upon being elected of nearly 80%. And he hadn't done a damn thing. He hadn't done anything. An approval rating of nearly 80%. And an approval rating among Republicans in the high 60s. Republicans, you all. But much like the Antichrist, he was found to be wanting. He was found to be something that he was not. Barack Hussein Obama conned the United States of America into believing that he could assist this country in lifting it out of lethargy, in lifting the country and making it, well, better. Do we live in a better America, you all? Can you honestly say that we live in a better America? I talked to a friend last night after last night's show, and she said to me, he's trying. He's trying. And I pointed out all of the areas where America is failing, financially, culturally, everything. All she could say was, all of this was in the making. All of this was a product of the previous president, and it's just snowballed, and Barack can't really do anything about it. It's going to take years to fix this problem. This is what she said to me. And I said to her, well, you know, George Bush is no longer the president. This guy has been in office for 3 years. 3 years. When does he start taking responsibility? When is it his presidency? It seems to me like everyone's stuck on blaming George W. Bush. And even now, Barack Hussein Obama can do no wrong in some circles. And I think you know which circles I'm talking about. Apparently, this guy is going to get a pass from everybody in a certain group of folks, a certain minority group. And it doesn't matter what he does. If he hauls off and cold cocks Benjamin Netanyahu, there are going to be folks who, in the black community and in the Hispanic community, who will say Netanyahu had it coming. And it's not Barack's fault. It's George Bush's fault. An earlier blog talk radio shows both Southern Sense and Tesla, myself, and perhaps even 2020 talked about the disrespect shown to Benjamin Netanyahu by our current president. And from his own lips, he was heard complaining about Netanyahu. When does this happen? How does this happen? We have been sold a bill of goods from a man who has obviously no interest in bringing this country out of its doldrums. Now, one of the things we talked about earlier that we want to talk about is Barack Hussein Obama Sr. A Heather Smathers, an investigative journalist with the Arizona Independent, obtained files through the Freedom of Information Act. A memo from the University of Hawaii Foreign Student Advisor said that Obama Sr. had been running around with several girls since he first arrived here, and last summer she cautioned him about his playboy ways. Subject replied that he would, quote, try, end quote, to stay away from the girls. Well, what red-blooded man wouldn't want to be around the ladies, especially in a college setting? What red-blooded American male, foreign male, any male, hell, a damn dog, what does it matter? What man doesn't like the ladies every once in a while? Well, a married man with a little boy and another whole family in Kenya. You're not supposed to be cavorting around with the ladies as a foreign exchange student when you're a married man full of responsibility. But Barack Sr. didn't quite see it that way. He married the nice, sweet white lady from Kansas, knocked her up, and then decided, well, it's time to move on to the next lady. Character. Character matters. Some say that character is embedded in our DNA. Some said that memory cells reside in the children we have, such that they mimic our behavior. Now, I wouldn't suggest that Barack Hussein Obama would cheat on Michelle. She kind of looks like she could give him a serious ass whooping at any time she chooses. So he probably wouldn't want to cheat on her like his daddy. But we're talking about character here. Do you believe that character is passed down from generation to generation? Do you believe that character is part of our DNA? Think of Joe Kennedy, serial womanizer. He loved the ladies. Married man, had 13 children or 14. I think it's either 13 or 14. Still a married man, loved the ladies, had no moral center at all, except when it came to money, making a lot of money and betting the ladies. His affairs with Gloria Swanson were legendary, are legendary. Well, each of his sons, except for perhaps Robert, cheated on their wives repeatedly, constantly. Hell, I believe Ted probably was having sex the day before he died with some other woman other than his wife. I don't know for sure. I'm just kidding about that. But that's just an example. Are we our father's keeper? Are we our father's clones? That's the question I'm asking right here and now. It's an interesting question, I think. and it's a fair question. I am very much like my father. Are you like yours? Do you love your father? Do you fear him? Or, you know, do you loathe him a little bit? Because maybe, you know, he wasn't there all the time, or, you know, for whatever reason. Other notes in the Obama file make reference to some kind of campaign to drive Obama Sr. out of the country and back to Kenya. And one memo in the file advised officials to withdraw his funding, not because he was a bad student, not because he was a bad guy, but because he was sleeping around with every woman he could get his hands on. And most of the ladies were white women. Racist? Perhaps. Hell, probably yes. But the fact that he's a married man, well, I tell you, as a young Marine officer, I was responsible for counseling young enlisted Marines when it was discovered that they were sleeping around on their wives. It was not a good thing to have them do that. Now, some would say, hey, that's their personal business. They can do whatever. No, no, no. Not in the military. Not in the Marine Corps. Back then, if it was discovered that you were fooling around with your wife with some other woman, you were standing tall before the man and answering for that. It's the truth. Could it be that Barack Hussein Obama Sr. was screwing around with Stanley, on Stanley and Durham and the little one with other women, and the officials were saying, like, hey, don't you already have a wife? Why are you screwing around with all these other chicks? Or was it about racism? I don't know. I can't answer that. But I can get to the facts. And the facts say that even though Obama had passed his general exams, which indicated that on academic grounds, he was entitled to stay around and write his thesis, Harvard had in the works to try to cook something up to ease him out of Harvard, to get him out of town. Now, was it racism? Were they being racist against the African for sleeping around with every white woman he could get his hands on? Or was it just morality? I don't know. I can't answer that. Some would say yes because of the times. The times suggest that folks were trying to keep him away from the white ladies. But they were planning to tell him that they were not going to give him any more money and that he had better return to Kenya and prepare his thesis at home. And he was booted out of the country. Do you boot a man out of the country because he's sleeping with a Caucasian woman or two or three or four while you're already married to one and have a young son? I don't know. You know, was the racism that petty to get him booted out of town? I don't know. It just seems to me like maybe there's a little more to it. President Barack Hussein Obama's mother met his father at a Russian language class at the University of Hawaii in 1960. At the time, he was the first and only African student at that university. When they met, she didn't realize he had already had a wife and two children in Kenya. So the couple divorced in 1963, and Ann Durham struggled as a single mother to bring up young Barack. Just as her estranged husband was studying at Harvard and reportedly carousing with any woman who would pay attention to him. I I don't know. I can't really say for sure what the deal is with this guy. I can just say to you that in my world, well, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And we live in a world right now that is being threatened by a man whom we hardly know. We don't know who this guy is. We don't know what he's all about. Folks gave him a job, put him in office, and said, hey, you know what? I think you'll make a good president because you talk a good game. You talk a good game, and I think you make a pretty good president. And so here's the job. Meanwhile, all of our freedoms are being eroded, one after the other. America is falling further and further and further every single day. I don't know if we fully realize what this social experiment was going to lead to when we elected a president who pretty much wants to see this country fundamentally transformed into something unrecognizable. But we can't say we weren't warned, can we? We were warned, but it's not going to do any good. We were told that at some point, there is going to be a takeover of this country, of our government. And the person would come as a sheep, a wolf in sheep's clothing, that he would say beautiful things, that he would bring peace, that he would bring the country together and indeed the world. And he would promise great things. No, I'm not talking about Revelations and the Antichrist. I'm talking about Barack Hussein Obama, the president of the United States of this great country, or once great country. Southern Sense has to check out. Hey, the call-in number is 347-884-8500. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Don't say that you weren't warned.
Back in 1927, an American socialist, Norman Thomas, six times candidate for president on the Socialist Party ticket, said the American people would never vote for socialism. But he said under the name of liberalism, the American people will adopt every fragment of the socialist program. There are many ways in which our government has invaded the precincts of private citizens, the method of earning a living. But at the moment, I'd like to talk about another way, because this threat is with us, and at the moment is more imminent, more imminent, more imminent.
One of the traditional methods of imposing statism or socialism on a people, then by way of medicine, it's very easy to disguise a medical program as a humanitarian project. Most people are a little reluctant to oppose anything that suggests medical care for people who possibly can't afford it. Now, the American people, if you put it to them about socialized medicine and gave them a chance to choose,
would unhesitatingly vote against it.
We had an example of this under the Truman administration. It was proposed that we have a compulsory health insurance program for all people in the United States, and of course the American people unhesitatingly rejected this. So, with the American people on record as not wanting socialized medicine,
Congressman Ferran said,
if we can only break through and get our foot inside the door, Then we can expand the program after that. Well, let's see what the socialists themselves have to say about it. They say, once the Foran bill is passed, this nation will be provided with a mechanism for socialized medicine capable of indefinite expansion in every direction until it includes the entire population. Well, we can't say we haven't been warned.
James Madison, in 1788, speaking to the Virginia Convention, said, since the general civilization of mankind, I believe there are more instances of the abridgment of the freedom of the people by gradual and silent encroachment of those in power than by violent and sudden usurpations.
Now, in our country, under our free enterprise system, we have seen medicine reach the greatest height that it has in any country in the world. Today, the relationship between patient and doctor in this country
is something to be envied any place.
The privacy, the care that is given to a person, the right to choose a doctor, the right to go from one doctor to the other. But let's also look from the other side at the freedom the doctor loses. The doctor begins to lose freedom.
It's like telling a lie, and one leads to another.
First, you decide that the doctor can have so many patients, they're equally divided among the various doctors by the government. But then the doctors aren't equally divided geographically. So a doctor decides he wants to practice in one town, and the government has to say to him, you can't live in that town, they already have enough doctors, you have to go someplace else. And from here, it's only a short step to dictating where he will go. This is a freedom that I wonder whether any of us have the right to take from any human being. In this country of ours took place the greatest revolution that has ever taken place in the world's history, the only true revolution. Every other revolution simply exchanged one set of rulers for another. But here, for the first time in all the thousands of years of man's relation to man, a little group of men, the founding fathers, for the first time, established the idea that you and I had within ourselves the God-given right and ability to determine our own destiny. This freedom was built into our government with safeguards. We talk democracy today. We begin to assume the aspect of majority rule is all that is needed. Well, majority rule is a fine aspect of democracy, provided there are guarantees written in to our government concerning the rights of the individual and of the minorities. What can we do about this?
Well, you and I can do a great deal.
We can say right now that we want no further encroachment on these individual liberties and freedoms.
And that you demand
the continuation of our traditional free enterprise system.
You and I can do this.
The only way we can do it is by writing to our congressman, even if we believe that he's on our side to begin with, write to strengthen his hand. Write those letters now, call your friends and tell them to write. If you don't, this program, I promise you, will pass just as surely as the sun will come up tomorrow. And behind it will come other federal programs that will invade every area of freedom as we have known it in this country. Until, one day, as Norman Thomas said, we will awake to find that we have socialism.
And if you don't do this, and if I do it, one of these days, you and I are going to spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free.
And we're back with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Did you know that Barack Obama's daddy holds the record for being the youngest World War II soldier? Apparently, Barack Obama Sr. served in World War II. He was a World War II soldier, according to his son, Barack Obama. Barack Obama said that his daddy served in World War II, that he was a World War II soldier. That would have made Barack Sr. anywhere from 3 to 9 years old during the year of his service from 1939 to 1945. Do any of your family members hold such records as being in service in World War II from 3 to 9 years old? How many of your family members served in World War II and were 3 to 9 years old? I tell you what. Maybe he just made a mistake. Maybe he didn't really know his daddy at all. Maybe. Well, here, I'm going to play the clip. Oh, my goodness. How embarrassing.
You know, we're betraying what I think is a solemn pact that we make with our veterans. My father served in World War II.
Okay. His father served in World War II. All right. Now, either Barack Hussein Obama was tragically misled or he is a liar. Perhaps he's simply making up this whole story. Even his stepfather probably...
And when he came home, he got the services that he needed.
So Barack Hussein Obama's a lying sack of shit just to make his point. He just wants to make a point, and it doesn't matter whether it's accurate, whether it's factual, whether it actually happened. I'm telling you, folks, what we have been sold is a bill of goods by this president. We have been sold snake oil by a snake oil charmsman. He just lies and makes up stories to suit the situation. Because, you know, there's some who would say, well, maybe he was talking about his stepfather. His stepfather was pretty much the same age as his daddy. So he would have had to been anywhere from 3 to 9 years old too. So Barack Hussein Obama will lie to you simply to make the point. It doesn't matter whether it's true or not. He was supposed to not be this kind of guy. How did this happen? In his 1995 book, Dreams of My Father, Barack Obama described a relationship he had with Frank. When Obama lived in Hawaii, and how he went to Frank for advice about college, racial matters, and other lessons in life. So just who is this mysterious Frank? It's not his daddy. It's not his stepfather. Who is this guy who so deeply influenced the life of Barack Obama? Well, here, I'm going to tell you. He was a pro-Soviet communist and a sex pervert. Just to make it interesting. He was a pervert as well. Well, Cliff Kincaid, obtained a 600-page FBI file through the Freedom of Information Act on Mr. Frank, who was none other than the infamous pro-Soviet Communist Party member Frank Marshall Davis. Now, President Obama went to this guy for advice. He was Obama's surrogate father. He was Obama's mentor. The complete file and an analysis of the shocking information are now being featured on websites across this country, particularly the American Survival Inc. website. And I'm going to go ahead and copy the link and put it in the chat room for those who are in the chat room who might be interested in it. At the same time, Davis wrote an autobiographical and pornographic sex novel called Sex Rebel, disclosing that Davis had sex with a young girl and engaged in shocking and bizarre sexual activities. A report on the excerpts are available at the same link that I gave you, www.usasurvival.org. Kincaid reveals for the first time that the FBI file on Frank Marshall Davis covers the years 1944 to 1963, meaning that he was under investigation or surveillance for at least 19 years. One document refers to Frank Marshall Davis as having a Communist Party USA affiliation dating back to 1931. Kincaid also has evidence showing that Davis was involved in communist activities in the 1970s, during the time he mentored Obama. Davis was included in the FBI Security Index. Kincaid also notes that Davis could be arrested or detained in the event of a national emergency. There were notes to that effect. The FBI material documents Davis's anti-white and pro-Soviet views. Former FBI agent and popular talk show host G. Gordon Liddy, my main man, said about Frank Marshall Davis, "Only very dangerous people were on the FBI security index. People who were on the side of an enemy and not on the side of the United States." Ironically, the young person Davis sent off to college, who would admittedly attend socialist conferences and pick Marxist professors as his friends, never had to undergo an FBI background check. And should he become president, he will be, well, when he became president, he was in charge of overseeing the FBI. Think about it. The president of the United States, the current sitting president, Barack Hussein Obama, never underwent an FBI investigation. Not that we know of. An informant stated that Davis spent much of his time in communist-style activities. Does the apple fall far from the tree? And what does this mean to what's going on with our country right now? It's been established that the President of the United States, Barack Hussein Obama, is a socialist. And that his background, his complete background, not just experimentation, because a lot of people experiment with different activities in different groups, you know, just to see what they're all about. But our president, Barack Hussein Obama, spent his whole life surrounded by these people. I mean, completely and utterly surrounded by these folks. His mama, his dad, his mentor, Frank, his college affiliations, everybody. So the question we have to ask is, what's to be done about this now? Because it's too late. We can't just boot him out. We can't just say, you know what, we made a mistake. Or can we? Because in 2012, in November, we're going to have to make a choice. We're going to have to decide whether or not we want our country to become fundamentally transformed into something that I don't believe it was meant to be. You know, folks say to me all the time, you know, why aren't you for Barack? Why aren't you supporting the president? He's doing his best. He's trying. He's trying hard. It's not his fault. I don't want this guy to do his best. I don't want him to succeed. Some people simply don't understand that. You see, I value freedom, my freedom, the freedom of my children, the freedom of your children. I value plain, good, old-fashioned freedom, more than I value butt-kissing and boot-licking somebody who's president of the United States just because he's black. Black skin doesn't mean anything to me. Nothing. No, you know, if we really want to get down to the nitty-gritty, most of the opportunities, I would say all of the opportunities that I received in my life to become a better person, to become a good and decent person, to be successful, came, those opportunities came from white folks. And every single time I had a misstep or there was a bump in the road, it was because some black person decided that they wanted to bring me down. That it was the crab in the barrel play at work. So when folks come to me and they say, you should be standing by Barack Hussein Obama because he's black, that means nothing to me. It means absolutely nothing to me. Barack Hussein Obama is leading this country down the path to destruction. My blackness be damned. For you black folks out there, your blackness, your ethnicity be damned. What you should be valuing more than anything else is your freedom. The freedom to do as you choose within the confines of the law, as long as you're not hurting anybody else, and often as long as you're not hurting yourself. But that's not how we're rolling right here, right now. This administration wants to regulate almost everything we do now. Barack Hussein Obama has said that once again, he intends to backdoor Congress, to go around Congress and act on his own. He has installed himself as a dictator, an imperial president. There are no, under his administration, there are no separate but three separate but equal branches of government. There is only him. Is that the way you want to roll, black folks, where you have a ruler instead of checks and balances of the three separate branches? You folks have installed a dictator in the office of the president, presidency. This guy does not care for the rule of law, nor the Constitution, and those things protect all of us. Now, I don't want to hear any more talk about 400 years of slavery and racism and all that crap. It's a cop-out. It's a sellout. It's an excuse. The Constitution exists for our protection. And when one man goes into office, I don't give a damn if he's black, yellow, green, brown, purple, or chartreuse, whatever the hell that is. When he seeks to limit your freedom and go against the Constitution of the United States, disregarding it, wiping his ass with it, he's got to go. Skin color, ethnicity be damned. I hope you're hearing me out there. So no more of this talk about him being black and we need to stand by him because he's black. No more. I've been hearing it all day today. The guy is a clown. He is a socialist and a communist and a Marxist. And some of you say, so what? Well, so what? That means your freedoms are going to be eroded. Do you not love your freedom? Do you love the fact that you have a black president in office more than you love your freedom? That's the question. Forget about this. He's black, and he's an historically black president. What about your freedom? You've been listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. We'll talk more about this tomorrow. Please come back. The Marine Corps' birthday is tomorrow. Let's celebrate the Marine Corps' birthday. God bless you and God bless the United States of America. And your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. Good night, folks.
When you walk through the garden, you gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon, walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, He's gonna save your soul. You got a man where you don't have to worry. If you hold on to Jesus' hand, we'll all be safe from Satan when the thunder rolls. We just gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. Devil.